Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome to Upfront. I'm Chloe Morgan.
And I'm Rachel O'Sullivan.
On today's show, heartbreak for Arsenal in the Champions League, but what a game. Rachel and I were both there and we're ready to get stuck into every last twist and turn. While Arsenal have a huge fight to get back into the Champions League next season, the future looks very bright after a first ever sold out Emirates Stadium and the atmosphere, oh my God, it was unreal. We'll also talk about Chelsea after their battling display against Barcelona in the other semi-final. Is the gap in Europe finally closing? And there's WSL title race developments because, well, when isn't there? So dramatic. What a dramatic weekend. Rach, I mean, we've got to get stuck into a very tasty bank holiday weekend. Sun was out. Crowds were vibing. Record-breaking attendance. What more could you ask for in a fixture like that, apart from a win?
First off, I want to start by congratulating both Chelsea and Arsenal for their campaign, their Champions League campaign. It's been such a privilege to be able to follow their journey. I think both teams have done so, so well. And the fact that both of them have been so decimated, I know I touched on this in the last pod, so decimated by injury, you know, I feel for them that they weren't able to give a true showing of themselves, but what they were able to do, their mentality and their fight, both teams, to do what they did, I just think is excellent and is such a promising sign for English teams in European football. So that's like the first thing I want to say.
Love those headline points. Thank you.
Yesterday was brilliant. It was lovely. And both games as well were in sunshine because I was in Barcelona for the Chelsea game. And then a lovely sunshine, sunny afternoon at the Emirates, which was incredible. 60,000 people. Noise was amazing. The fans were great. The football was brilliant. And yes, obviously, gutting. Going out in that fashion was gutting. But I just thought the fight and the display was just fantastic.
I think the whole day, I was on the way to Emirates. I was walking down Holloway Road, looking into the pubs, the Gooners. What pub were you in?
the Tollington.
And who turned up?
Leah Williamson to pull some pints.
What? Was she a good pint pourer?
Obviously. It's Leah Williamson. She's good at everything.
I was going to say, the deliveries of the Guinness pint pulling must have been absolutely on point.
Yeah, from one end of the bar to the other, straight down, accurate as ever, yeah.
Gosh, so speedy as well. I saw her up and down the bar and I was like, do you really have an ACL injury?
Then Kim Little came in.
Fire.
She was very professional at what she did.
Really? Not just renovating flats, but also pulling pints.
In out, job done. She was fantastic.
But I think, yeah, in the lead up to it, everyone was walking down. Everyone had the flags going. There was the crowd, the noise, the atmosphere, the band were insane. Walking around the sort of pitch side, you know, giving it big beans on the trumpets, the trombones. You had the snares going. The sunshine was out. And I think everyone was maybe a little bit tipsy. And I had a couple of pints and stuff in the bar. And I won't say that I didn't partake in a few myself. But it just felt like a really good atmosphere. And not necessarily just the Arsenal fans. But I mean, there was like, what, four Wolfsburg fans?
There was a couple of hundred of them in their corner in their illuminous green. Yeah.
Really?
Give them credit. Yeah, they were
really
good.
I mean,
I was sat near them, so I could hear them.
Arsenal, I just felt so disappointed. Obviously, 3-2 Wolfsburg. Game went into extra time. It looked like it was heading to penalties. And then an error at the back. And Lotta Wubemoy, more than anything, I just feel sorry for her because she'd had an absolutely stellar, outstanding game, robust defensively. I think they were all robust defensively. I think Rafaela had an amazing game. Lotta had an amazing game.
Pullover.
Jem Beattie, an amazing game. Manuela Zinsberger wasn't called into action too much, but I think she had an amazing game as well. So, yeah, defensively, they were very robust. And I don't think Wolfsburg necessarily seemed like they were on point. I was expecting a little bit more from Wolfsburg, especially in the opening half. But, yeah, I thought that was it was very unfortunate for Lotta. I think that's going to stay with her for a little bit. But,
yeah,
the entire 118 minutes... it was a phenomenal game of football.
This is it. Like, she had a fantastic game and everything. You're going to remember that because that's ultimately what allowed Wolfsburg to win. But, you know, you've got to look back at the fact that Arsenal had the ball in the back of the net four times.
Yeah.
Like, Stina Blackstenius technically put the ball in the back of the net three times. And two of those times, I think whoever passed the ball was offside. And then there was another one, Lotta had the ball in the back of the net herself. You know, you can't pinpoint everything on one mistake when so many other things, you know, we talked about it last week or the other week about inches, right? Like, there were so many little things that just didn't go their way. If Katie McCabe's whipped in shot had been a couple of inches lower, and it would have gone in and not hit the crossbar. So,
do you think that was a shot or a cross?
It's Katie McCabe, it's a shot.
Do you reckon?
100%. Yeah.
It just looked too whipped because it whipped away from the bar like that. And I just think that was a delivery.
It's McCabe. She was up for it. She wanted to get the winner. She was like, forget this playing it into the box. I'm just going to whip it. So I would reckon it was a shot. But I just feel like it's so hard to not focus on that one error. But you have to look at all the other little things, all the other moments where they could have won the game. And even if that ball hadn't gone in and Bremer hadn't scored, doesn't mean Arsenal would have won the game.
Mm-hmm.
It just means they probably would have gone to penalties. And who knows how that would have went. So, yeah, I'm sure she'll be feeling gutted. But what was lovely was Miedema and Williamson both hobbled as fast as they could across the pitch, made a beeline for Lotta Wubemoy at the end of the game. That was their priority. And then Idavel as well, like, shook the ref's hands and made a beeline for Lotta. And Blackstenius was there as well. Like, there is a lovely, and it's the same at Chelsea, there's a real vibe about the team, about working and fighting for each other. And obviously, I guess injury does that for you. And we were talking about this, about both teams have had players who were probably not meant to be starting players when they were brought in. And they've come in and they're doing a job that they probably weren't expecting to have to do. Like, when Blackstenius went off, at 60 odd minutes, everyone was like, what the hell? You've got
to
keep her on the pitch. She's amazing. She's their best chance to score. Where is she going? And like, when you think about over the months, the criticism she's faced from people about how she can't score. And now we're all crying out that she's going off the pitch. Turns out she tweaked her quad. But like, you've been a player. You know, those moments where you have to step up, like the fight, what is it that just gives you that extra edge?
I think because the opportunities that you get are so far and few between. And I think especially for a goalkeeper, I mean, you're rarely going to be called into action unless it's maybe a cup game or it's a, you know, a red card or an injury or whatever it is. And I think when you have a moment like that, the only thing that you can do is play your absolute best because you've got nothing to lose at this point. I mean, you have an absolute shitter, you're back on the bench again, or you have an absolute worldie and actually you put yourself in a really competitive position where you're fighting for that that shirt. And I think, you know, Sina Blatsinius, I think, I mean, she started the season fairly strong, got stronger and stronger. And then with Mida Miedema being out, I feel like actually it's kind of brought the focus into her and she's relished the limelight. I think she's relished the opportunity. And I think she's now proved herself as like one of Arsenal's, if not Arsenal's, star striker at the moment. I think she was so much of an attacking threat, so much of a presence. She was putting Wolfsburg to shame in some of the deliveries that she was, you know, in the positions that she was getting herself into. I mean, that one-on-one through on goal, I thought, absolutely incredible. I think that was just, for me, it was a bit of a Stina Stella moment, that game. So yeah, I couldn't understand why she'd been pulled off. I thought that was ridiculous. But now that I know she's obviously had that injury.
But it was a game changer. It felt like it just, when she went off, like, no disrespect to Hurtig, but I felt like, that's in my head, I was like, they're not going to get this back, because I just didn't feel like Hurtig was able to offer what Stina offered. You know, it didn't feel like they were going to have as much chance on goal or as much accuracy on goal. You know, I spoke to a friend of the pod, Alex Abissetta, afterwards, mm-hmm. and we were like, you know, maybe we would have put Cool in the midfield and thrown Frida Manum up front. And yeah, I just... For me, that was the turning point in the game. Even though Beats obviously got that header, that was a turning point, because I feel like there were moments that they had after Blatsinius had gone off that had she been on the pitch, she would have scored.
I just think Hurtig, I'm going to be really honest and quite critical here, was flat. I know, yeah, she's not on full form at the moment, but she didn't offer any kind of attacking outlet. There was no option there. And I think you're right. As soon as Hurtig came on, and the physicality for me wasn't there. There was nothing to, there was no hold up play. There was no spark from her. There was no kind of energy. And I think that was a game changer. I think from that point onwards, I was thinking, okay, well, yeah, they've come out here with a sort of squad that's been patched together for this game, but Hurtig is, that's not the right choice.
I mean, obviously, Arsenal didn't have a lot of choices. They had kids on the bench, you know. So, but yeah, I just, it's a difficult one, because especially coming back from injury, she's not match fit. And I think what Stina Blatsinius has proven over the last few months, I've been a big supporter of hers for the last few months. I just felt like she needed a bit of time. She was obviously getting a lot of criticism because she wasn't putting away every opportunity. Mm-hmm. But equally, I don't think she was getting the right credit for the hold-up play and all the other work she does off the ball. What I felt she'd lacked the last few months was that physicality, and my God, has that come on in leaps and bounds. Mm-hmm. That first goal came from her being physical and bullying someone off the ball, and she was so good at that yesterday. She was not giving up every opportunity, even if she kind of knew the goalkeeper was going to get to it. She pushed and pushed and pushed, and I think, you know, the goals she scored in big games. She scored in the Conti Cup semi-final against Manchester City. She scored in the Conti Cup final. Like, yeah, she's not maybe scored as many goals as Arsenal would have liked, but she scored when it matters.
Yep.
And I think that's quite the stark difference in her and, say, Alina Hurtig, which I don't think they're necessarily a direct comparison player for player, but that's what kind of lacked then when that substitution was made. Was it just didn't feel like we had the same, Arsenal had the same physicality in the box and pressuring the ball in the same way.
I've also got to talk about the other error from Arsenal, Moritz, the foul, yellow card, 41 minutes just before halftime. Arsenal put in an absolute cracking performance, and it was just such an unnecessary foul. It was a deep free kick delivered in, headed to the edge of the box, and it was just like the Rod strike. I mean, there was nothing that Zinsberger could do about it. The ball bounced awkwardly and it went through a hell of a lot of bodies to get into that bottom right corner. But I just think it was such a bad moment for the squad. But it wasn't a turning point. It wasn't the crowd didn't go flat. The Arsenal side didn't go flat. It felt like actually when they came into the second half, I don't know what Idaville had said, but he'd given them maybe some Huel, maybe some Lucasade, maybe something else. But I mean, when they came back out into that second, it was a matter of seconds before they'd put the ball in the back of net, before it was obviously went to VAR. And VAR was having an absolute field day.
They got
itself.
Their money's worth out of VAR. It's like, we haven't used it enough at all in this Champions League, so let's just use it for every single decision. Basically.
I'm assuming the Emirates must have a quota for VAR that they've
used it all up, their year's worth, just yesterday.
I mean, there's an Arsenal men's game on the stadium today, so I'm assuming it's probably broken for that. So yeah, it was a lot, but yeah, and I think the other attacking threat, especially from Wolfsburg, was Jonsdottir. I thought down
She's
that
amazing.
Wing. It was magic to watch. I mean, there was someone on socials who had said, okay, I think Jons, there was a dribbling movement that she did, and it went through about four or five Arsenal players before she took a shot. Someone said, oh, like, she's going to use that as her entire highlights reel. It was beautiful. But again, Wolfsburg, I don't think, made the most of that option going into the second half, because I thought that was such a good attacking line.
Yeah, she is fantastic. But also, you have to factor in Alex Pop being back.
Oh, God, do we have to talk about Pop?
When I saw her on the team sheet, I was like, oh, like, this could be a problem. And of course it was. And she set up Jill Ward's goal and scored the second. She is inevitable. She's one of those players that is just inevitable.
That header.
Yeah. And
so annoying, that near post header. It was just unnecessary. Unnecessary to do that. And it was like, that was another Arsenal mistake as well. I mean, there was three players around her and no one got close enough. And that is the one person that you want to mark in that kind of position that wasn't good enough.
It's, look, it's the same with Chelsea. When you're playing these like quality European teams, you just can't make mistakes. And that's like a really difficult thing to do, you know. And that's what happened with Arsenal. There were individual errors, but it's that's why Champions League is so tough, is who can hold out the longest, who can make the least amount of errors, who can execute their game plan to the best of their ability. And, you know, despite all of the injuries, and like, we've got to talk about the fact that it looks like Wienreuther for Arsenal probably has done her ACL, because what other injury is there for an Arsenal player to do? She was only on the pitch about 18 minutes.
It was bad.
And that knee planted and did an unpleasant look, and it just gave out from underneath her, and she was down and she knew straight away. And I mean, God, I feel for the Arsenal players. There's about four of them around her, like, straight away. It's like they just know. So she was stretchered off. But like, in the you add that level of adversity on top of execute the game plan. You're playing a top quality team. You're in front of a sold out crowd. Like, there's so many elements that impact you. And yeah, like, I mean, I imagine, you tell me, you're a player. It's hard to just never make a mistake.
I mean, God knows I've made a fair few of them in goal, and they've been very bloody obvious. Thanks for, you know, reminding me of all my happy memories.
I thought you were going to say, no, I never made a mistake.
Not I. Weird that I never got the call up for England. It was just a faultless 11 years of playing. No, it is obviously hard. You know, you don't want to get into that pitch. You don't want to make a mistake. You don't want to let your teammates down. And I think that was the hard. I got quite emotional actually watching Lotta, I think, at the end of the game when she was in tears. There were so many people around her, and I think I don't want that to. And obviously, like, she's obviously vying for the Lionesses positions as well. Like, she, I mean, that's going to be sitting and playing on her mind, that, you know, she's had this absolutely stellar game, but the headline point is Lotta's defensive error. And I really hope that isn't the focus of what we see in the narratives coming out.
I think, like, for Lotta, I wouldn't worry about that being the thing that doesn't get her into England. I mean, you know, Mary Earps had a howler against Brazil and another one against Man United. Doesn't mean she's not she's not one of the best goalkeepers in the world. This is the point. Like, they're individual errors. They don't kind of define you as a player. And I know it sounds super cliche, but it's true. Like, you can't talk about the error she made without talking about the fact that she played 118 minutes of really good football.
Mm-hmm. But I think it's different though for someone like Mary Earps, who is an established number one Lioness. True. Like, can I say fuck up?
We swear all the time.
Okay.
Welcome to Upfront. Where have you been? Hello, I'm Irish. Every second word.
You don't know the age of the audience that we are now reaching, okay?
Block your ears, children. She's about to swear.
Can we put like a disclaimer before beep that? Yeah. Yeah, if you make a fuck up and you're England's number one and you've had an absolutely robust season and not put a foot out of place, yeah, fine, you make an error. You've got a bit of leeway. You've got some credit in your bank. But I think for Lotta, who is someone who is trying to break into the Lionesses, or not break into the Lioness, but she's trying to get that starting position, a mistake like that probably does play on your mind a little bit more.
I'm sure it plays in her mind, but my point is that Serena Wiegmann isn't going to look at that and say, oh, she made a mistake.
Get
one
out.
Mistake. Get out. They need defenders. So I don't think one mistake is going to be the thing that kind of drops you from the squad. But look, that's easy to say. I'm sure she just feels like shit.
Well, another player we've got to touch on, our fan favourite, Jen Bloody Beatty. Also the favourite of ex-Love Island contestant, Amber. He put out this amazing, amazing tweet saying, I've just been told to sit down. Excuse me, my girlfriend just scored a header, which was a vibes tweet. I think a lot of people appreciated that. It was so nice and lovely to hear. Yeah, just the connection that those two have, a little bit of an insight into their relationship. And obviously Jen Beattie had a marvellous game, scoring that amazing header, but also being a defensive unit at the back. She was channeling kind of like a Millie Bright type energy back there, and I really rated it. Aerially strong.
I tell you what, if someone had told Jen Beattie at the beginning of the season that she'd be playing 120 minutes in the Champions League semi-final this season, I don't think she would have believed it. But, you know, what a shift she put in. And Jonas, I mean, to be fair, I think maybe she came off in the 119th minute. But Jonas said, you know, every player brings something to this squad. Like, there's nobody on there just warm on the bench. And every player is going to bring something. And he trusts every single player to do their job. And Jen just proves that.
Yeah, And I think it was credit to the squad depth, I think, with Arsenal. And I think had they have fielded their strongest starting 11, had everyone been fit, had everyone been well, I think this could have been an Arsenal win. I think we could have seen them in the final facing Barca. I'm not saying they would be winning that, but I would be saying they'd be making it.
Yeah, it's a really hard one to call because the mentality that they've developed around this squad, this kind of fight or die, this kind of ride or die attitude has come in. We've seen it with Chelsea as well because of the injuries. They've had to pull together. They've had to fight for each other. They've had to dig so, so deep and do things they probably didn't think they'd have to do. And you don't know whether you would necessarily get that if you aren't facing that level of adversity. But equally, you'd have, you know, star players playing where they're supposed to play in top form. So, you know, they very well could have gone just as far. You do kind of ask yourself if your Meads, your Kim Littles, your Leahs, your Vivs had been on the pitch last night, would it have been a different story? And I'm sure it would have been. But I think the shift for me for both teams this season has been the mentality. And I think in the past we've seen them wilt under the pressure or wilt under the kind of coming up against such dominant teams that have beaten them in the past. And they kind of, that fear creeps in. And I think that's been such a massive shift. And I actually think that's down to the fact that they've had to fight so hard for each other throughout the season.
Massively. It is that kind of, not an underdog mentality, but they've been through so much adversity together. I think it does strengthen you. But yeah, I mean, it's disappointing in a way, or a little bit scary, that an Arsenal side that looked so strong against Wolfsburg that could have easily made the Champions League final now look like they're in a position in the WSL table where they might not even be making European football next year. And I think, I mean, just looking at the table at the moment, they're currently fourth. They've played 17 games, 38 points. But two wins could easily take them into second again if they get those two games. They've got two games in hand to Man City and Man United.
It could come down to goal difference between them and Man City for that third spot.
Yeah, massively. And the goal difference is bloody tight. Arsenal on 29, Chelsea on 28, Man City on 26. Man United, obviously, taking it away with 39. But it's going to be, I think it's going to come down to these May games. I keep thinking it's still April and it's not. It's bloody
May. It's
going to
be May.
Oh my, don't even. Where did that come from?
I think seeing how Arsenal come back on Friday night will be a real teller. Same with Chelsea tomorrow night. I think they play Liverpool. You know, can they get rid of their kind of Champions League disappointment? And
they could never have a better game lined up. Leicester.
I don't know. Leicester have just won 4-0.
Yeah, but against Liverpool. The Arsenal side that just played just then, you think they're going to have any difficulties against Leicester?
The Arsenal side who've just been sucker punched and kicked out of the Champions League at the last minute.
They love adversity. They thrive on adversity.
So long as Stina's injury isn't that bad, then fine. But like, that's my point, is the game after these disappointments for both of those teams will be really, really telling.
Okay.
I'm not saying they're not going to win. I'm just saying I'm looking forward to seeing how they both bounce back from this.
Easily, okay. Is my take.
Right.
Right.
Thanks for that deep analysis there.
Thank you. Always here for the deep dives.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Barca, Chelsea, 1-1, but 1-2 on aggregate. Barca obviously heading through to the Champions League final. Hansen scoring in the 63rd minute, Ryson in the 67th. The draw at Nou Camp wasn't enough, and I think it was always going to be an uphill battle. When you've got a crowd like that at Camp Nou, it's a lot. We knew that. We knew that going into the second leg that this was going to be bloody difficult.
Yeah, Emma Hayes said it actually though, that the game was lost in the first leg, which is true, statistically and factually. But, you know, the performance they put in at Camp Nou, like, massive, massive credit to Chelsea, because obviously going to be difficult going there. Barcelona had something like 79 home games unbeaten, which is absolutely incredible. And in isolation, Chelsea breaking that is really bloody impressive. Yeah. And drawing at Nou Camp 1-1. If you told them that again, beginning of the Champions League, you're going to draw 1-1 with Barcelona at Camp Nou, you'd be like, bloody hell, this is incredible. But obviously that Stamford Bridge result is what killed them. And I thought, it's such a gamble. Like, me and some of the other journalists, we were chatting about this after the game. Like, when do you roll the dice? You're playing the best team in the world. You need to stay in the tie, which they'd done. When do you go for it? And it felt like Chelsea just left it a little bit too late. And obviously, you know, Barcelona get the goal and Chelsea turn around and score almost immediately 4 minutes later. And you just wonder, I reckon they're probably trying to get to 70 minutes and then they were going to go for it in the last 20.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I still think credit to Chelsea. They did well. Barcelona were time wasting. You know, they were kind of had them. Emma Hayes said they were nervous. Of course they were. They want to get to a Champions League final. But equally, I do think Barca were the better side in terms of, you know, possession and chances. They just looked the more threatening. But I just think, yeah, hats off to Chelsea for staying in the tie the way they did. And it was just a really, like, it, in isolation, it was such a, like, prideful performance, a performance that you could take pride in. And it was just a shame that in the first leg it had been lost.
Well, I think if we look at the progression of this Chelsea side since that defeat in 2021, and then we look at, like you said, a Chelsea that is keeping one of the best team in the world at bay, at home, in front of a massive bloody crowd, against all odds, with their own injuries as well. I think that was a stellar performance when you take that, just those headline points in isolation. I think, yeah, I don't think they learned from the mistakes of the first leg. I think Caroline Graham Hansen still allowed her to run riot. And I think, you know, when you've got a player like that, of her quality, who's obviously, I know she had her sort of injuries and things like that, but she's never looked so bloody strong.
But what do you do with her? She's unbelievable.
You take her out. You're a, no, I don't mean like that. Oh my Jesus. God. I don't mean take her out and injure her.
Sniper,
I mean,
in the crowd.
Yeah. I mean, you mark the hell out of her. You stay close. You double mark up. You give
at
her hell.
At what cost when you're playing Barcelona though?
Physicality, that is a player that you need to wipe out. And I mean wipe out tactically. I don't mean wipe out physically.
But you're tactically trying to wipe out, like, there are 11 players. It's not like she's the one star player.
But you've got to prioritise then. You've got to, who's going to pose the biggest threat? Is it going to be the player who in the first leg scored within 3 minutes with that whipped round disgusting shot? Or is it going to be someone on the defensive line? Like, you've got to...
I get that, but I feel like with Barcelona, you know, if you...
And who scored?
But if you dampen down one player, then the other one just fucking it's like shines. Like, yeah,
you just do you know what I mean? It's not like pops up.
It's not like you can like mark her out of the game and then you've got, you know, less threats. It just feels like another one pops up somewhere.
But then it's not like you hit Graham Hansen and then Puteas pops up. She wasn't there, okay? She wasn't there.
They could have brought her on. No, but
I think she was fuming that she didn't get on. I think she looked ready and raring to go. And obviously the crowd were there pretty much for her. She did look a little bit moody on the bench.
Probably because they drew. But no, I mean, yeah, Caroline Graham Hansen is just so technically gifted. Like, she just makes it look so easy. And I was lucky enough to have her on my side when I was shooting in the first half. And yeah, you're just, she's hard to shoot because you just find yourself just
in
watching.
Awe.
Yeah. And actually, Barcelona are hard to shoot. I had Sophie say this to me the other day when she had to photograph instead of me. And she was like, oh, they move so fast. And I'm like, oh, you get used to it. It's like anticipation. Bloody hell, Barcelona move so fast. They're so hard to shoot that
Rapid.
Like you finally get yourself set up and they pass the ball again.
It's those teeny tiny little triangles. Yeah. Those teeny tiny little passages of play.
But the fact that Chelsea did what they did with Millie Brighton Buchanan out of their back line. Mm-hmm. Like, credit to Eriksen and Maren Mjelde, who stepped up. Maren Mjelde was, I thought, was really, really good.
Unreal.
Yeah.
Very good defensive partnership. Solid emergency defender. And there was a lot of emergency defending.
And there's going to be. Like, you're never going to play Barcelona and not have to emergency defend. Like, it doesn't mean, like, you're bad.
It's not
like
a failure.
I mean, I know Emma Hayes said that the better team lost, which I think a lot of us will struggle to get on board with. I think Chelsea could have won it. They had, you know, opportunities to win it, but equally so did Barcelona. 5 shots and 3 on target, and Barcelona had 14 with 2 on target. So I can understand, like, she'll sit there and say, like, we could have won it potentially, but I wouldn't agree that the better side lost. Yeah, that was maybe.
It looked to me like Emma Hayes had set up too conservatively, I think, for a game like that. I mean, we're talking before, you said, you used that lovely analogy of roll the dice, okay? But the gamble for me wasn't there. I was like, going into that second leg, you literally have nothing to lose. I was like, you need to commit more players forward. And I got the impression that players were a little bit nervous to do that just in case they went forward and then were exposed at the back. And it didn't feel like the same kind of mentality that, oh, we've gone one down, so therefore it's going to be 3-4-5-0, whatever it was. I just think they needed to be a little bit more bolshy.
Devil's advocate.
Punchy.
If you were 2-0 down or 3-0 down from the first leg, 100%, you have to throw everything at it. You're only 1-0 down. You need one goal to take this tie forward. And I think Chelsea were probably gambling on, rather than, say, going for the early goal and trying to hold on to it and, like, angering the Barcelona beast, they were trying to stay in the tie for as long as possible and hoping to get a late goal. And
but
that's a risk.
Teams don't do this enough with Barcelona. They shit themselves and stay back and park the bus. And I think what would happen if you had a Chelsea side that had come out of there, all guns blazing, and high-pressed the hell out of Barcelona for the first half? What could have happened?
True, but then you got to factor in, like, Arsenal, that Chelsea have played so many fixtures with such a thin squad, and how much do they have in them to be able to do that against a Barcelona squad that are going to have so much of the ball. But when you look at possession, Chelsea had 46% possession, which is pretty impressive against a Barcelona squad. So
for sure.
I don't think they fully just sat back to try and absorb the pressure.
No.
I think they, you know, obviously they were trying to get it on the counter-attack and stuff, but I it's hard to criticise Emma Hayes' game plan too much, because I just think it was about the timing of when they gambled for me. Because otherwise, I think to come out of Camp Nou with a 1-1 draw, you've done something tactically right.
Yeah. Well, going into the Champions League final, we've now got Wolfsburg and Barcelona for the matchup. I mean, I don't want to be too bold about my predictions, but I would 100% put my entire flat on Barca walking away with a victory, especially given Wolfsburg's performance against Arsenal. I think Barca can look at that and think, okay, well, if Arsenal can do it with a depleted squad, I think we're going to be okay.
You got to factor in as well that Alexis Putellas will most likely be back. She's back playing now. She'll be back for this one.
Horrendously bad timing for Wolfsburg. Horrendous.
Yeah, I would say Barca. I maybe wouldn't be quite so strong as you. I think.
Really?
Yeah, I think.
I'm pretty bold.
You are very bold, always. I do think finals are different. You know, Wolfsburg are a very, very good squad. Arsenal, credit to them, tested Wolfsburg. But I also feel like you have to give Arsenal credit for that, rather than say it was Wolfsburg not playing great. I think Wolfsburg have a different level in them. They've got some unbelievable players. So, yeah, I still think Barca will win it, but it will be a tasty, tasty tie. What's interesting, though, and what's a shame, is you're looking at Wolfsburg, who had, I think they had 28,000 at their game. And Arsenal obviously sold out 60,000. Barcelona had 72,000 at their Chelsea game. Incredible. And Chelsea, of course, at Stamford Bridge with tens of thousands.
I think 20.
Final is going to be in a stadium that holds about 35,000.
That's a shit show.
It's just a real shame when you're seeing such progression. I mean, the atmosphere, I'm assuming, will be brilliant. Ticket sales obviously went on ahead of before people actually knew who was playing in it. But, you know, it's just, yeah, it would have been great to see them at a bigger stadium. But I reckon it's potentially another Champions League for Barca.
Gosh, another trophy to add to the Barca cabinet. It must be absolutely they must have to reinforce it.
They probably just bought an IKEA.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, and they just store
a warehouse.
Yeah, for all their trophies.
Some more juicy fixtures in the WSL. I mean, it's easy to forget the WSL even went on this weekend with all the Champions League drama that's been taking place. We'll do a quick mention for Villa. I mean, they put up a bloody good fight against Man United. That got a bit hairy. Man United just about walking away with 3 points after a 3-2 win. I mean, Millie Turner for the last minute winner. Who'd have thought it? It was dramatic, but it was spicy. And it was credit to Aston Villa and like the threat that they are posing to the top four. They're
disruptors.
They are disruptors themselves in Liverpool. They've got a lot of games lined up in the next 3 or 4 weeks that have the potential to win and determine the league. It was crazy. I mean, what were your thoughts, Rach? What a fixture.
Oh, the amount of drama. We had relegation drama this weekend and we had title drama as well. And who said it? Maybe it was Carlo or Marcus. Someone said, you know, this is what champions do. This is what makes you a champion. When you're in these situations, you're pretty much down and out. You think, you know, the game is over. It's never over. And it's never over until that final whistle goes. And Man United showed that. And that's what they've been lacking in previous seasons, is that belief and that winning mentality, which they have now. And that is why they're top of the league and have been top of the league for so long. I mean, Chelsea leapfrogged them briefly as well. But, you know, that game could be a turning point in terms of the end of the season. And oftentimes we can identify little things. Last season it was Arsenal losing to Birmingham. Mm-hmm. This season, potentially, it could be this game.
I think, I know I don't like to talk about Man United too much.
No,
I never really do that a lot.
So this is quite unusual. Go on.
Yeah, I want to take this rare opportunity to sort of talk about how dominant that was. I mean, yes, it was hairy, but you could talk about the kind of mentality monsters and blah, blah, blah. But Manchester United now are proving every single time they've got to pick up those points, they now do it. I mean, with that win, they've now equaled their highest ever WSL points tally with 3 games remaining. Chelsea are now 7 points behind with 3 games in hand. They are pretty much the only ones who I see causing an upset, but the onus is now on them. And that's a lot of pressure. That's a lot of pressure to be putting on Chelsea, because they've got to win those fixtures. Manchester United have now set the bar at this level. Chelsea, come and meet us.
Yeah, but I think many would say they'd rather have it in their own hands than to be relying on others. So, you know, we've seen Chelsea do it before, but absolutely, Manchester United are doing absolutely everything they can. And I think, like I said, like that's what kind of turns teams from challengers to winners. So, yeah, it's you couldn't ask for more drama, could you?
No, I think it's slowly becoming, dare I say it, a kind of a 2-horse race. A Man United, Chelsea. Not saying Man City. We can't rule out Man City. But if we're going to go back to the old Grand National analogy,
okay,
looks like Man United and Chelsea are edging ahead. Man City briefly held up at a hedge,
okay,
and Arsenal struggling now to see round the bend.
Right.
Yeah?
Sure, I would be on board with that analogy if they'd all played the same number of games.
Okay, fine.
But given they haven't, it's hard to entirely rule anybody out.
This is the current picture.
Okay.
Okay, that's what we're going with for our analogy
fine.
For this week.
Oh, that was a shit one this week.
That was, because I came up with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, Man United have Tottenham to play on Sunday. Chelsea have Liverpool tomorrow, so we probably should be picking up points from that. Chelsea then have Everton again Sunday, and then Leicester City on the 10th of... God, they've got quite
games
a few...
Games galore.
That is 3 fixtures for them in a week. So that in itself is a little bit of a dangerous factor, because we know how much Emma Hayes likes to talk about loading and how much recovery time the players get. So it'll be interesting to see how they cope with
that. We also know how much people like to talk about how much they love these battles and these challenges, and they relish playing in all these competitions. So
Well, a lot of tasty games lined up, but we'll keep you updated with obviously the football, but also more importantly, mine and Rachel's analogies. Rach, where are you going to be this weekend? What are you up to?
We've got Chelsea tomorrow.
Yes.
And then I am at Brighton, West Ham. And I know Arsenal are playing Leicester on Friday, but I may watch that from the couch.
Lovely. Well, it is a bank holiday weekend. King Charles coronated this weekend, so I know where everyone will be, not watching the football, but watching...
Not in London?
Our popular monarch take his rightful place at the centre of an outdated...
This podcast has turned. We've got you who doesn't like the royal family and an Irish person, and you obviously know how I feel about the royal family, but anyway.
Well, this weekend is my first weekend off because the championship has finished.
Well done, Bristol.
Well done, Bristol. Amazing run. Congratulations. Welcome back to the WSL. It'll be interesting to see how you get on. I just saw that they've announced actually about a whole host of players leaving the Bristol City squad. So it'll be really interesting over the summer to see what their transfer situation is saying and what kind of budget they've got, because it's going to be bloody tough up there.
Yeah, but also an example of just how tight the championship was. I went to the Birmingham-Bristol game of the weekend and Birmingham won 2-0. So they finished the league a point behind Bristol. And I think they beat Bristol both times they played the season. It just shows you how close the season as a whole was.
I would caveat that and say Bristol probably didn't give a shit about that game. I didn't catch the game and I don't know what players they put out, but I can't imagine
I was there.
Did Bristol
care?
It
was a good fight, yeah.
Really?
I just think as an example of how tight the league is, you know, it's a testament to the championship, basically, is what I was trying to do, and you've just shot all over it.
So. Well, now we've got the new FA announcement with the Southern and the Premier National League teams going up into the championship. I don't think it's long before we're going to see two championship teams going up to the WSL. That's going to increase competition. That's going to make it a much more exciting league with two spaces available for the championship side. So, yeah, just on a roundabout point, I'll bring it back round and say, yeah, actually, it's positive. Let's end on a positive.
Thanks, Claire.
You're welcome. Thanks for listening to today's episode of Upfront. We've got a special bonus episode for you on Thursday, an interview with none other than football agent Joe Tung, who represents some of the biggest names in the game.
You know it.
You know it's us. You know it's us. We've been looking forward to this interview for ages, so definitely give it a listen. It's a really insightful chat about the women's football industry as a whole and a fascinating peek behind the curtain of how deals are done at the top level. If you've got any questions for us before then, please tweet us at Football Ramble, Rach is at Girls on the Ball, and I am at Morgie_89. See you on Thursday.
Upfront is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, mate.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.